Warning! This episode contains some strong language. Listener discretion is advised. Reading the stories that didn't make it. I'm Hillary B. Bisnieks. Listeners, I am super thrilled today to welcome somebody who I've been telling, you know, anytime you want to come on this podcast, absolutely feel free. Probably since about the time I started the podcast, Laura Blackwell. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. This is a case where you've actually beaten me to the punch because you had me on Story Hour, gosh, 2-3 years ago?
It's been a while, and we should do that again.
We should do that again. I probably have another story I can read. we will be talking about Story Hour more in a little bit, but first of all, we're going to be reading part of your story, Poor Prisoners. Is there anything we need to know before we get into this? And I know that we have a lot to talk about afterwards.
Well, I mean, I think that as I read, you'll start to see some of the reasons for why this story is not ever going to see the light of day in print. It's pretty bad, Hillary. It's from 2016, and looking back, I'm just so gratified to see that growth can continue all through life.
Yeah, I have a story that is not leaving the trunk that I wrote in 2016.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not a quitter. I don't like giving up on stories easily, but I had put this one aside and some recent events made me think maybe I should look at it again. And I went and looked at it again and perspective told me that I did indeed have something to read for you on this show.
All right. Well, excited to get into this.
All right. Poor Prisoners. Oh, I should warn you that I'm going to be attempting a few vague accents just so you can tell who's talking.
Fabulous. Okay.
So, Poor Prisoners. I flashed my ID card fast, hoping the unsmiling middle-aged man who'd hailed me would take it for an official badge and not just a key card for getting into work. Paige Gregory, Department of Justice. He wore jeans and a plain parka, but he stood like a cop, firmly rooted to the stone-look ceramic floor tiles of the Grand Forks International Airport lobby. No melted snow puddled under his boots. He must have been waiting for a while. Doug Amundson, Criminal Investigations. Good to meet you. Was the DOJ taking over? We just want to see what you've learned. It was what Hallie had told me to say, and it was most of the truth. She had cautioned me to stay as close to the truth as possible. Shouldering my carry-on, I asked, any developments to the manhunt while I was in the air? Let's talk in the car. He gestured for me to walk ahead of him. I breathed a sigh of relief. Detective or not, he was buying it, just as Hallie had said he would. Just enough people in the government owed Hallie just enough favors that she'd had someone call ahead to say an investigator was on the way. I had no training in field operations, and she wouldn't have sent me if she'd had anyone with a more suitable skill set. I didn't owe Hallie anything. I was just loyal. The chill hovering around the sodden doormats wasn't enough to prepare me for the blast that hit when we stepped outside. The cold slammed up through the soles of my dress boots, bit at my uncovered ears, made my exposed teeth ache. It wiped the smile clean off my face. Amundson turned the sedan's heat on full blast, but the chilly vinyl seat still made me shiver. What's the latest? I asked. Depends on what you already know. Amundson aimed the car down a stretch of straight, smoke-colored highway edged by a low wall of chunky, graying snow. A gray sky pressed down, flattening the landscape. I'd never seen a place so drained of color. Hallie wanted to know if Gatz's conditioning was wearing off. It wasn't supposed to, but then the project wasn't supposed to get defunded either. Our file on Gatz is classified, If you can tell me about the murder, I might be able to help you figure out why he did what he did. We're still trying to establish motive. The car started to slip to the right. Amundsen corrected it by steering into the skid. It didn't break his chain of thought. What can you tell me from your file? We're not ruling out a psychotic break. Hallie didn't want anybody digging into Gatz's history. The now-defunct secret project for the now-defunct secret lab had set him up with a backstory in Jamestown, but it might not hold up under scrutiny. But we'd like to know what made him crack. Still looking for a link between Gatz and the victim. As far as we know, the first time you saw Caitlin McMurray was on stage the night of the murder. During intermission, he left the audience, got backstage, and caved her head in with a Fresnel light. I pulled up the Grand Forks Herald's article on my phone. In a posed photo, a slim young woman beamed over her shoulder, long brown hair spilling down her back. The article said she was a sophomore at the University of North Dakota, which put on the play. If there's a way to make sense of it, we will.
I'll hold you to that.
Who is she playing? The article said she was starring in Shakespeare's The Winter's Tale, but I didn't know what part that meant. The Lost Princess Perdita? It was, shoot. The same name as that girl in the Hogwarts movies. Hermione? That's it. Been a while since I watched those with my son. An eddy of snow swirled across the road ahead of us, and a gust of wind shook the car. I'd seen drifting snow in D.C., but never in a space so wide and open. I thought for a second it would push us off the road. I'd read Shakespeare less than a decade ago, trying to show Hallie that my associate's degree didn't keep me from being a thinker. It felt like a past life. Hermione's not a big role, is it? I think she's a queen who gets falsely accused and is locked up for most of the play. I haven't seen the whole thing. I asked about the landmarks we passed. How old was that brick building? Was that an outdoor skating rink in the park? But my attempts at flattering interest didn't result in an outpouring of civic pride. I spotted a paperback on the seat. The cover showed a face rising spookily out of a brilliant shade of evening blue. Are you reading The Great Gatsby? Oh, my son left his copy at home, wanted me to bring it to him. Amundsen shook his head. Thought he couldn't get through study hall without that exact copy and the exact bookmarks he put in it. Didn't make it there in time, but the school library has copies. You're a good dad, I said, envious. You have kids? He kept his eyes on the road, or as much of it as the snow let peek through. It's not a question I get often with my round baby face and lack of a wedding ring. No, I like them, but I'm not ready. I didn't like discussing my personal life, but building rapport was useful. Hallie said I was good at that ever since that day I found out it was her birthday. I got a cake and had them write Henrietta on it instead of Dr. Jacobs. When she asked me why, I told her it seemed cold to put somebody's resume name on a birthday cake, and she laughed in surprise. And she asked me to call her Hallie, her family nickname, even though she was 30 years my senior and I was just an admin at her lab. I became her personal assistant, and I learned what the project really was. To Amundsen, I added, it's nice of you to try to get your son's book to him. I don't know that it's the best thing. He's a good kid, but shortcuts make people lazy. After digesting this a moment, I asked, can we see the crime scene? Not much point. Forensics has been over it. You've been traveling all day? There were no direct flights from D.C. to Grand Forks, and he had to know that. If the crime scene's a wash, I'll come with you on interviews or go over evidence you've collected. Where are you staying? I named a chain hotel near the mall. It offered a ridiculously cheap rate and didn't require a credit card for deposit. Just the thing, since Hallie couldn't officially reimburse for this trip. The wad of cash she'd couriered to my apartment seemed ample, but I had to be careful. Jet lag's a bear with the time zone change. I'll drop you off. Once in my bland hotel room, I paced, talking to Hallie on the burner phone she'd given me. The crime scene is important. Hallie lectured me quietly in her flat Nebraska accent. Voice was thinner than when I'd worked for her, and I felt a pang. Was this what it was like for people who saw their parents aging? We need to know if Gatz's conditioning is unraveling. I'd like to, but I don't see how a university theater would spark anything from his former life, I said, pacing the compacted carpet. It's not like it's a soccer field or something. You only know the parts of his life that made it into the papers. His father worked in a movie theater. Maybe there's something about the layout of the theater or the seats. I'll see what I can find out. You're doing great work, Paige. Her voice warmed slightly, and I could tell she was smiling. I always know I can count on you. There was a time when Hallie had a large staff to count on. Psychologists, plastic surgeons, hypnotists, IT and support staff. The experiment had ramifications for everything from witness protection to rehabilitation to prison crowding and beyond. It wasn't cheap to run, though, so once its main backer lost re-election, that was it. Stay inside in case you're being watched, Hallie cautioned before hanging up, and drink lots of water. Air travel is dehydrating. I skimmed news updates and The Winter's Tale on my phone. I'd remembered the play accurately, but I didn't feel much for misplaced Princess Perdita now. I felt worse for Queen Hermione, falsely accused of adultery, and her son, who wasted away in sorrow during her imprisonment. Her friend Paulina was the only person in the play who seemed to have her head screwed on straight, standing up to the king and somehow resurrecting the dead queen at the end. I wished Caitlin McMurray had a friend like her. I wished I did. Of course, the murder was the leading item in the local 5 o'clock news. James Gatz's whereabouts were unknown. The photo on the screen showed the broad cheekbones and thin eyebrows of his new face. I had only seen his other face, before plastic surgery and iris implants. Even the dull expression in his now blue eyes looked unfamiliar. Co-workers at the sugar beet refinery in East Grand Forks described him as a mild-mannered man who kept to himself and worked the night shift whenever possible. Everybody was surprised, just like they had been at his crimes years before, when he was somebody else. Gatz's co-workers didn't know about that. Hallie wanted me to make sure nobody made the connection. Is that a good place to stop?
Whew. Absolutely. Oh,
I mean, I could go a little on, but it goes on, Hillary. That's the problem. Goes on.
So the first thing that always strikes me is, like, it's so much easier to judge our own work more harshly than we judge other people's. Followed immediately by my second thoughts of, oh yeah, I can see even from here, like, you know, like there are some interesting bones here, but also.
Right. And I had actually thought I might stop a bit further on, and then I was just like, oh my God, no. I don't want to just keep reading through this thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really... I had a very interesting sort of related experience recently, which I think bears telling to our audience, which is, do you remember LiveJournal?
Yes, I remember LiveJournal.
So I was talking with some friends on Discord the other day, and the subject of LiveJournal came up, and I was like, huh, I wonder exactly how old my LiveJournal is, and I know it's still online. I am not linking it in the show notes, dear listeners.
You left it at LiveJournal?
I left it at LiveJournal. I blogged for a solid decade there from 2004 to 2014, and then I just let it go.
You know, somebody creepy bought LiveJournal, and so I moved everything over to DreamWidth.
Yeah.
And that's where mine is now, but, you know, I haven't touched it in ages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I looked back, the person who brought it up was like, you could not pay me enough money in the world to get me to read my early LiveJournal entries. And I was like, well, my whole brand at this point is getting other people to read old stuff. I can stand to go back and read a couple of my old journal entries. And it was really, I think, kind of really instructive of, like, seeing where I was 20 years ago and seeing, like, oh, you know, the bones are there. Like, that's the same person. They just haven't figured out a lot of things. And, like, that's the same thing when we look... Like, I wouldn't want to be them again.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, knowing that that person, like, seeing the direct lines between that person and who I am now felt very similar to, like, I can still pull up writing that I did then and see the lines between that writing, that fiction that I wrote then, and the fiction that I'm writing now. And it's just really interesting. And I think it's something, I know a lot of people feel, have a lot of cringe feelings about their past work. And I would strongly recommend listeners, if you can, go and look at something that you wrote 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, if you have it, and, like, treat it as if you're an archaeologist.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And it's funny, too, because there are some things that that are from the same vintage or even a little older that I actually still like.
Mm-hmm.
Some things that gelled better. Bitter Perfume was my first professional sale to She Walks in Shadows, and I still like that story. It's 10 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a phrase in it I still wish that I had tweaked, but all in all, I really still like that story. But this one, I'm just like, wow. You know, I can see how there are things that I'm working with even now because they were important then, but I wasn't doing it right. And I feel like maybe there's some things you just sort of keep working through until you've gotten it out. You know, more recently, I've been working with this same idea of a mentor who you really, really look up to, who is deeply, deeply flawed and turns out to be doing maybe not more harm than good, but more harm than good. More harm along with the good.
Absolutely. And that's something that, like, is, you know, it we talk a lot about killing your darlings as being one of those just sort of, like, you know, we have a lot of writer cliches, and really it's less that you should kill your darlings and more that you should just, you know, suggest to your darlings that you've got a really nice barrel of wine in the basement and you'd love to show it to them. And then just keep them down there for a while and, you know, eventually maybe you need them again.
Nurture your darlings.
Off-screen.
I think the whole kill your darlings thing made a whole lot more sense when we didn't have personal computers. Mm-hmm. And I think that the advice is from then, because that's, you know, that's from the era when you had to just put a line through something that you had written with your typewriter. And, you know, now you can cut and paste it and put it in another document and, you know, go back and look at it later and figure out someplace it might actually make more sense.
Mm-hmm. Or you can do like my dad does, who still writes everything either on the typewriter or longhand and just put editing marks around it to say, this would be better over here. He's got an essay he's been working on for probably 15 years that is spread across, you know, 5 or 6 semi-complete drafts and then a lot of just random pieces of scrap paper with his scribblings on, you know, like in the margins of a different thing or like...
Yeah, I can only imagine how interesting those files must look. I just have Word docs of this kind of stuff, but I know some people actually keep these big bonkers looking boards where they pin up all of their stray ideas and move them around.
Yeah. Yeah, well, a constant refrain on here is go listen to the episode of... It was not We Make Books. It was before We Make Books, I believe. But in the We Make Books feed, that Rekha talked to Macy about her murder board method.
I heard you mention that. I need to go look that up.
Links, again, will be in the show notes. I will try to remember to send you a link to it afterwards. I also pulled it down and saved it for my own self, because I don't know how long the We Make Books feed will still remain up.
How long is anything going to be up? You just never know.
Yeah. But, like, that's the sort of thing where it's like, or I had an idea that I was just talking about this on the episode that you, dear listeners, won't hear for another month, but I recorded it yesterday because podcast time is fake. Talking about a story that I initially wrote in, I think, 2013, maybe 2014, that the bones were really interesting. I couldn't make the story work. I tried to make it work as a traditional story twice. I tried to turn it into an piece of interactive fiction using Twine. A year or two later, couldn't make that work. And I finally turned the core conceit into a solo journaling game the year before last. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show, like, hang on to those ideas that you find interesting. Because you're gonna... I just got a rejection on, I think, the final version of a story that the core conceit of it is literally the core conceit of the first short story I ever tried to sell almost 20 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it's
that's
like,
still important to you. You remember the things that are still important to you. And you find a way.
Important.
You find a way.
Yeah. But it's like, it transformed from that first one was urban fantasy, detective fiction, hard-boiled by someone who had zero genre awareness or savvy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very much wearing all of my literary influences on my sleeve at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, was like 7,500 words or something long.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned the core conceit of that into a 400-word flash fiction story about being trans.
Because sometimes that's the part that matters.
Yeah.
You know, that there's just a flash's worth in a novelette sometimes.
Yeah.
And
it's wild.
Yeah, and I think that this story, for starters, was not the right size. It definitely was not the right pace.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did it sound like the beginning of a short story to you?
No. Sounded like the beginning of a novella, probably.
Right. I mean, this is a problem, right? That a lot of people think, oh, I'll write a short story because it's easier, and then I'll write a novel. But they haven't read enough short stories to really be good at writing short stories. And so, you know, they write something that begins like a novel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the problem with this. Part of it is also, as you were saying, the genre awareness, because, you know, it's definitely got some science fiction underpinnings, but
mm-hmm.
it is on some level, it is really more of a mystery story with a little bit of a thriller stuff near the end that's really poorly done. And, you know, I read mysteries sometimes, but I don't really know how to write them. I really,
mm-hmm.
I mean, even now I don't, because I just haven't invested in that.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? Maybe I would not be good at it even if I did really, really try. But, you know, sitting down and writing this, I learned some things about what just wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
About things I just didn't know enough about. One thing that was really funny about it was that some people I knew were putting together a crime and mystery book with women's perspectives. And they were like, well, you know, we'd love to have some stuff to look at. You know, we'll give you a lot of feedback if you're in early. And so, you know, I'm like, okay, let's see if they like this. Let's see how I did.
Mm-hmm.
And the feedback I got was, have you ever had a critique group?
Oh, harsh.
I know, which is just like the most damning thing.
That is gutting.
And I was just like, oh my God, are you kidding? Of course I have critique groups. You know, this has been beta read. You know, I've had published short stories. I know how to write a story. But, you know, I didn't have a mystery critique group. I didn't have a thriller critique group.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm not sure that even that would have saved this. But I think it would have taught me some things. There are a lot of other reasons that I'm not comfortable with this story and that I really decided to abandon it that we can talk about later if you want. But that was one thing, the lack of genre awareness. I tend to play with genres a lot anyway, because I tend to just sort of tell the story I want to tell and try to figure out where to put it later.
Yeah.
Which,
I mean, like gender, genre is fake.
Well, so. It kind of is, except that, you know, readers go and look for things by shelf and by category and by tag. And so do editors. You know, editors
that's
have
very true.
A magazine to put forward. And the magazine is really very rarely just, hey, I'm so-and-so and this is stuff I like. Mm-hmm. You know, it's usually a bit more focused than that. So,
even the one time I was a submissions editor for just a single issue of a magazine, when me and Annalie Flowerhorn did the Quaker Science Fiction in Friends Journal back in 2021.
Is it that long ago now?
I feel like it has to have been, but that also feels wildly fake.
Yeah, just like genre and gender.
Yeah. But it's like, for years I would say, oh, you know, I would love to start a genre magazine, but it would be so hard for me because I just want to buy every single thing. And actually sitting down and being the person, you know, even if I wasn't the person writing the checks, being the person who has X many words of budget and having to, like, read through actual submissions, I was like, oh, no, there's definitely things.
Right. And what's really interesting to me is when you can actually read all the way through something and say, wow, this is good. It's not what I want.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting that you said tags. I know that is something some authors will put their AO3 tags in their book, or at least in their book pitch. But I primarily think of tags in the realm of fan fiction, which
I was thinking of Goodreads, because Goodreads also uses tags.
Yeah.
And I guess most of the magazines that print short fiction don't use it, but I feel like tags has sort of become a way that people communicate online. You don't see them a lot on social media for type of story, but you do now and then.
Yeah. And I think that that's something that as to at least certain groups of people, fan fiction becomes a bit less icky, that we start seeing more of, which is good. I want people to not think of fan fiction as icky, because fan fiction is amazing.
Well, I mean, I think that like anything that starts small, the parts that make their way into the public consciousness first are the most ridiculous ones.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, I think that if you talk about fan fiction, most people will think that it's all slash fic and you know, proto Omegaverse stuff and all. And, you know, it's not. It's not. But those are easy targets for people to make fun of.
It is. And
although they can be good.
They can be extremely good. And some of, you know, you can have like really amazing you know, the Omegaverse framework can be the framework for some really amazing, you know, world-building commentary, all these sorts of things. And that's great, like, you know. And it just takes time for, like you said, it takes time for things to, like, filter through the public consciousness to the point that it's not just like, oh, ha, 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 it's Kirk Spock slash fiction, you know.
Right, which, you know, could be marvelous. I don't know. I don't actually read a lot of fan fiction, but I think that it's very, I think it can be very good for writers. I think that that working with something that has a lot of the world building already done, has some, a lot of characters already done, and that teaches you a lot about craft.
Yeah.
So I think it's useful for writers in that way. And, you know, there are, which is not to say like they're all practice stories, because they can be good. I just don't read a lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I read slowly, I tend to be very selective about the fanfic that I read. So I tend to stick to specific fandoms, like a very narrow set of fandoms that I read in for the most part.
That's reasonable. I mean, my TBR is literally an earthquake hazard at this point.
Yep. Same.
Yeah. I laugh at people who call it a TBR pile, and I'm like, really? Yeah. Really? It's just one pile? Because I have five. The one by my bed is the one that's likeliest to kill me.
I have to winnow the bedside one down every few months because it starts becoming a threat. And either, like, just shelve the books so that they have a space on the shelf, or move them to one of the ancillary TBR piles.
Yeah, I don't really have enough shelving to do that, unfortunately.
Oh, no, same. Big same.
Just not enough shelves.
Every time I, you know, we just got through the Christmas season, and it is literally, as we are recording this, my birthday.
Happy birthday, Hillary!
Thank you.
Happy birthday!
So I expect that I have already received several books this year, and expect that I will receive several more that I will have to make space for on the shelves.
Are there any you're really looking forward to?
I'm really looking forward to digging into more. I just started reading. I just got past the introduction and translator's note on Emily Wilson's Iliad, which I adored her Odyssey. I read that 3 summers ago now. I had a summer of translations where I read her Odyssey and Seamus Heaney's Beowulf and Maria Devata Headley's Beowulf, just like in quick succession, back to back to back. And like, because actually I love the classics when they are interpreted in really interesting ways.
Yeah. And I like having different versions. I actually collect different versions of Grimm's fairy tales.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, because then you can, if you want to dive into a story, you can open it up and really see how different people have handled them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's always fun.
My Iliad and Odyssey that I read in college, I borrowed from a friend, and so I don't have copies of that to do a comparative reading with.
But those were probably Lattimore and Fitzgerald, right? So you could get those anywhere.
It was either Lattimore or Fagles for them.
Oh, Fagles, yeah. Okay, you're younger than I am.
I definitely read the Fagles and Aeneid.
You're younger than I am, if you had the Fagles.
Yeah.
Fagles is good, though.
Fagles is really good. And, you know, I really enjoyed... The class that I read them for was just a class on epic and heroic poetry. And so it was the Iliad, the Odyssey, the Aeneid, and then Paradise Lost.
I really want to read Paradise Lost all the way through. I've never have all the way
through. You have to read it out loud because they hadn't invented quotation marks yet.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way I could understand what was happening, and I mean, obviously also I was a college student reading this in the afternoons after finishing work and class for the day, and it's not that Paradise Lost itself is soporific, it is that any book at 3 in the afternoon, after you've already had hours of work in class, is soporific.
Yes. Yes, there's actually a point, and I think it's supposed to be 12 hours from the midpoint of your nighttime sleep when you will get sleepy again. Yeah. And for me, that does tend to be somewhere around between 2 and 3.
Yeah.
And that's when it is for most people. And unfortunately, the answer is not, as I thought, for yours, more caffeine.
No, unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
It works better to just do something like try to get some fresh air or some walk around or something.
Yeah.
The things you learn when you're too old to make use of them in college.
Right, of course.
Why didn't I know this 30 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but for Paradise Lost, the best tip I have is read it out loud, use different funny voices for all the characters. So, like, Lucifer had a different voice than Beelzebub, had a different voice than our Savior Jesus Christ, had a different voice than, you know, on and on and on.
Like reading to kids, only it's Milton.
Yeah.
That's fun. It seems like it would be a fun project to do together. Just assign lines and run it with somebody else.
If I had had anybody else taking that class who lived in the same dorm and had the same schedule as me, I think I would have done that. Because that seems like the ideal way to do it. But, yeah, so the Iliad, and then I'm really looking forward to Anne Leckie's Translation State. I really, really need to read that. I love the Ratch books. Absolutely love them. And keep on thinking I should just do a reread of the trilogy at some point, because they are some of my favorite books.
I don't do as many rereads as I used to. I just have so many things I need to read fresh. And it's sad because I used to really love rereads. I did recently read a book that was so artfully done. I went back and reread some of the earlier chapters.
Oh, nice.
It just came out. It's The Djinn Waits 100 Years by Shabnam Khan.
Oh, I've heard good things about that.
It is amazing. She's a South African writer, and this is a gothic that is written, it's set in Durban, which is not a setting you see a whole lot.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And the characters are, I think almost all of them are ethnically Indian. And a lot of them are actually even recent immigrants, which is not uncommon. That may be her background from her name. I can't say for sure because I don't know. But that, you know, that makes it kind of interesting. And there are some things that I think I would have figured out a little bit faster if I had understood some of the terms. But I'm not mad that I didn't either. And it is really quite an exquisite gothic in the ways that matter to me for gothic. Gothic
nice.
Has become very broad. And, you know, to some people, gothics are always very romantic and, you know, terrible weather and white nightgowns. And, you know, those things are all great. But to me, the gothic is about, more than anything, isolation and a person with little power, usually a young one, sort of trying to navigate a societal structure that's supposed to take care of them, but actually doesn't.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about gothic, because it makes these stories so personal and so big at the same time. So I feel like I learned a lot about that particular facet of society over the period of the 100 years, because it's told in two different timelines.
Oh, that's so cool.
And it is beautiful. It is, the writing is beautiful, and it has all these different points of view, and they're not always neatly marked out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, this is actually from the point of view of the house.
Uh-huh.
This is the point of view of the smells in the kitchen. This is the point of view of one of the minor characters. And it's beautiful. It's so well written. I really, really enjoyed it.
That's awesome. I love the way that you phrased what interests you about Gothic really solidified for me. Like, I've loved Gothics for a long time, but not really been able to pin down what exactly it is. But the things that you just said highlight, and like, some of the my favorite books that I've read in the last couple of years have been Gothics as well.
Mm-hmm.
Ivy Noel Weir and Steens's Archival Quality, which is an amazing graphic novel that was inspired by Ivy's internship at the Mütter Museum in Philadelphia, which is
I've heard about it.
Yeah. For folks who don't know, one, check out Ivy's episode where she reads the first draft of the short story that eventually became Archival Quality, the graphic novel. And two, the Mütter Museum is I think it's officially the Mütter Museum of the Philadelphia College of Physicians, and it's a museum that is intensely focused on the body and the ways that the body can be different. And it's very easy to say it is just a museum of medical oddities, and I think that that's, at this point in time, I understand that that is both kind of reductive and disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
But Archival Quality, like, if you know about the Mütter Museum, even if you don't know that link, you can feel it really intensely. And I think Ivy also calls it out in the afterword of the book. But yeah, Archival Quality, Sarah Gailey's Just Like Home, and then I think the two most recent novels from Caitlin Starling, The Death of Jane Lawrence, and then Last to Leave the Room, which just came out.
Oh, that one's Gothic too. I gotta catch up. I love Yellow Jessamine.
Last to Leave the Room is a deeply complex, very good, very fucky book. It is very
That's
Caitlin
on brand.
Starling.
That's on brand.
Yeah.
I love Luminous Dead too. That is a fantastic book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really...
Oh my god, that book scares the shit out of me.
Oh, it's so good!
It's so good!
But I love, you know, I've always enjoyed Gothics, and I've never... I, too, had a lot of trouble understanding why they appealed to me so much, because, you know, it's a genre that a lot of people kind of sneer at, you mm-hmm. know? Like they kind of sneer at romance, that it's, you know, sort of... That it's like, you know, bodice-ripper girly stuff, which is, you know, reductive and insulting. And
yep.
I had a great chat with Megan E. O'Keefe about it at one point, who I think most people know for her science fiction work,
mm-hmm.
but she's also extraordinarily well-read in mysteries and gothics.
Mm-hmm.
And she told me about some nonfiction books that she had found interesting about gothics. And so I went and read a few of those, found a few more, some kind of scholarly ones, and really started to understand what made them so compelling for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Megan's great, too.
Oh, she's amazing.
I'm trying to remember. I think we might have talked a little bit about mystery and stuff on the first time she came on Trunkcast. But that was more than 4 years ago. So it's kind of hard to remember anymore. You know, we are now in season 6 of Tales from the Trunk.
What? Congratulations. That's awesome.
It's wild. It feels so unreal. I didn't even remember to say it on our last episode, the first episode of season 6 with Adi Sway, until like right at the end of the episode when I was suddenly like, wait a minute, it's the 6th season.
Yeah, that happens to me with Story Hour sometimes too. I need to go and remember exactly what the debut date was because we're coming up on 4 years now.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a great segue. Listeners will have heard me mention Story Hour several times before, not the least because I was on Story Hour, but also I do make an attempt whenever possible to shout it out.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
I have noticed that.
I think it's a very, very fun and very important service. And something that, like, you know, similar to how I started doing book tours on this show in the pandemic, is something that filled a need created by the pandemic, but continues to fill a need in this sort of, I don't want to call it post-pandemic, but in this normalized COVID world.
That's a good way to put it. I've been calling it post-official pandemic, which is a little wordy.
Yeah. So what is Story Hour for people who maybe have missed out on every previous time I've mentioned?
Story Hour is an online weekly reading series that was founded by my co-host, Daniel Marcus, back in 2020. It was either March or April. It was, you know, right when the lockdown orders were coming and we were all freaked out and locked up. And he just wanted a place to hang out and read stories with his friends, you know, see their faces and tell each other stories. And so it's just an hour when people show up and read complete stories. We did experiment for a little while with novel excerpts, and it's just not the same, because if you have a complete story, and we have at least two complete stories because we have two writers come on and each read a complete story or a few smaller ones, you can sleep at night when it's over.
Yeah.
You know, when you don't have to wonder how it's going to end. And, he had that going for a few months, and then he said, oh, you know, I'm thinking of cutting back frequency. It's getting to be a lot for one person. And I was just like, oh, gosh, you know, I really like this being weekly. And so I asked how I could help out, and he said I could use a co-host. And so that's been a thing that I've been doing every Wednesday. And Daniel and I are there, and we bring in two different writers of some speculative fiction. We don't generally try too hard to match them up. Although we do try to make sure that horror is sort of on its own night.
Right.
Because if horror is tense, can be the more jarring thing if it's up against like a nice little cozy fantasy or something.
Yeah.
Because these are all things we love, but just because they're two great tastes doesn't mean they're great together.
Yeah. I'm kind of, I'm trying to imagine how it would work to have, like, I don't know, like Steve Toce on the same episode as, now I can't think of a single non-horror writer.
Right. I mean, like Amanda Cook and Steve Toes or something.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she writes this wonderful, affirming, good-hearted fantasy.
And love
I love
Amanda's
I
fiction.
do
It's
too.
so cozy.
It is. It's and Joe Miles is another one who writes things that are not always necessarily cozy, but very thoughtful and good-hearted. And then, Steve's work is bleak,
Yeah, I love
beautiful,
Steve's work.
exquisite, and bleak.
Yeah.
And that can be pretty discordant.
Yeah.
So we try to do that. We also try to balance out the science fiction and fantasy with the horror because CIFWA has given us a giver's grant. And so we want to make sure that they're well represented. And HWA, also, we don't have a grant or anything. I don't know if there is one I should be applying for. But HWA,
HWA, send story our money.
does publish Story Hour announcements in its newsletters. So, we want to make sure that we're representing the people of both organizations somewhat. And speaking of money, nobody makes money at Story Hour. So the grant is literally just for keeping the website going and keeping our Zoom subscription up because we have this a kind of unusual way of doing it. We have a live through Zoom and then everything is saved on Facebook. And so you can watch Story Hour on Facebook. You don't actually have to have a Facebook subscription. If you have a link, you can just get in. But one thing that's kind of fun about this is that I've discovered that some of my, former classmates and relatives, people who I didn't think were especially interested in Story Hour type of stories, really enjoy them. And that's been really nice. And it's also very easy there for authors to share. And so then it's really quite heartwarming seeing, people's aunties and uncles leaving comments on how great they did. But yeah,
Yeah, I love that.
I love it too. And I'm just so floored every week with the quality of fiction that we're hearing because these are just authors coming on and reading their own work. And it's even if it's already been professionally narrated, and it often has been before, which we're happy with. We like it if they can get money for their stories first.
Yeah,
It
please.
even if it's been professionally narrated by an actor and been scored and everything, it's still really neat to hear the author reading it in their own voice. It like we were saying about looking at your different translations.
It's there's something so gosh, I think it's Pratchett who talks about storytelling human as like, we talk so much about like tool use being the sign of like, oh, this is an advanced organism, but like that. Yeah, tool use is great, but like storytelling is where it's at. That like that's what we understand as something that separates us from other animals. Not that that's necessarily true. We do not we know that like crows talk to each other about things all the time.
Oh my gosh.
But that like the act of and tying that back to the epic tradition of Greek poetry that like Homer may not have ever been a real person. We have this understanding of Homer as this one guy, but like the Iliad did not start or end with one mononymic poet.
And you have to wonder how little things crept in, who had a turn of phrase that caught on, or who had a drum to beat about some particular issue or kind of character, or wanted to show a certain city in a certain light.
Yeah, and in her introduction to the Iliad, Wilson talks about how in the original Greek, going off of, I think, the Oxford text, like, you really see that there are so many different, like, dialects and modes of ancient Greek throughout the Iliad that really reflect that this is something that was passed down orally and, you know, touched by a hundred hands, 1,000 hands, before it ever got written down.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's what we're doing here with Story Hour. Like, you're never going to get even the best narrator is never going to give a clean reading in one take. And there's something charming about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always say just keep reading.
Mm-hmm.
People are like, oh, what if I stumble? Well, you just keep reading.
Yep.
I mean, everybody does. I mean, okay, there are a few people who don't, and they're amazing. But,
yeah,
you know, I've watched the audience as readers are reading their stories, and I've watched, and when there's a stumble, no one's like,
mm-hmm.
you know, no one's mad, no one's growling about it. They're just hanging there like, more story.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hear more of the story.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to really bother them. They just want to keep having their story.
Mm-hmm. For real. I don't know if this came through over the Zoom link or what. There was this weird sound, like, I don't know, it was kind of like somebody was rubbing a wrench against a bass piano string or something, and this blue police box showed up in the room, the podcast room. And I'm wondering if we can take a step into this time machine, go back, and if there are any words of wisdom that you can offer to younger writer Laura, and by extension, to our listeners.
You know, looking at this story in particular, I want to tell her that she needs to play around more. She needs to be playful. She needs to experiment, and she needs to work on things that she's enjoying.
Hell yeah.
And I would also tell her that she needs to be more serious about the career side,
mm-hmm.
you know, to make art, to try to make art, to have fun, but also to see where would, to work on craft, you know,
mm-hmm.
to play, but also to learn and to try to get things out there, to try to establish yourself better.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really, that really is the thing of, like, you can tell when people are enjoying themselves,
mm-hmm.
and it makes it so much more engaging.
Right, right. I mean, looking at the story, you can tell that I know nothing about police work.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really try that hard to research it. You know, I apparently thought I knew something, but I look at so many things and I'm just like, oh, wow, this is really ringing
mm-hmm.
false even to me. And of course, you know, now I'm very uncomfortable trying to even write anything with police in it because I just...
Right.
This story has really lived through some changes in our society or some events that have made things known.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very uncomfortable with the murder of a young woman as well.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of stuff. But, you know, it's funny looking back. I mean, did you know that Premi Mohammed and I actually had our first pro sale in the same book?
Amazing.
Right? And she has so many books of her own out now.
She has, like, 18 books coming out this year.
And they're all fantastic. Everything uh-huh. I've read of hers is always fantastic. Now, I am not going to be like, gosh, if I'd just taken things more seriously, I would be just as successful and wonderful as Premi Mohammed. Because, you know, doesn't necessarily follow.
Right.
But also, maybe if I'd gotten off my duff a bit more, I could be further than I am.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's really doing stuff.
Yeah.
from the same start.
Yeah. Yeah, I think our first episode that we recorded together was pre the release of Beneath the Rising.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, like, I had her on to talk about and what can we offer you tonight, which has a Nebula Award now.
Yep, yep. Although, you know, I loved Annual Migration of Clouds more.
Mm-hmm. Though I don't know that I can compare them because they're both stunningly beautiful and extremely different. But
they are. They are. It may just be a matter of taste.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that.
The Butcher of the Forest just came out and is incredible.
Where is my copy? I pre-ordered it. I should have it by now.
Oh, I have an ARC, so.
I feel like pre-orders should be shipped so that you get them like on release day. I strongly agree. I don't think it's fair that you put in a pre-order and then you have to wait.
Yeah.
While other people are going online and going, oh, it's fantastic.
Even worse, some of my friends in Australia, it took weeks for them to get the newest Murderbot book after it came out.
Really?
Yeah. It's
just because of shipping?
A crime.
Oh, that's terrible.
I know.
Oh, that's terrible.
Which, like, speaking of books that I'm glad that I had an arc of, and also it was an absolute torture to have an arc of.
Why? Why would it be torture to have an arc?
I couldn't talk to anybody about it.
Oh, okay. I can see that. I can see that.
There were two other people on the fandom Discord server who had read it. And, like, sure, getting to talk to two other people about this thing is great, but when you're in a server of 900 people,
mm-hmm.
like, the Category 1 nerd event that happened the day System Collapse released, and the people who blitzed through it three times in 24 hours, and... you know, suddenly all of the new meta and all of the new fan fiction that was appearing, and
oh my god,
the juicy stuff. This server does a New Year's fanworks gift exchange, and so the amount of post System Collapse work from this year's gift exchange was just phenomenal.
Is that Yuletide?
No, it's okay. I don't even know if Murderbot qualifies for Yuletide anymore. I think the fandom might be too big.
Oh, interesting. See, like I said, I hear a little about fanfic, but I don't really know that much about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, the server itself organizes a gift exchange. Which is
That's another cool.
One of those, like, you know, we couldn't be in this amazing place with fandom if we didn't have amazing volunteers.
Yeah. But you hear how much more animated we are talking about books that we love than talking about this fragment that I just read? I mean, I feel like if I had been more succinct about when talking to this person in the blue box, that I'd have just said, love your work enough to be playful with it and love it enough to take it seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hell, that's a tagline right there.
Right? I mean, it only took me 3 minutes of mumbling to get with it, right?
Mm-hmm. And that's what we were talking about since the very beginning. Like, we had the skeleton there mm-hmm. and figured out something to do with it.
Yeah, although, you know, this story's never going to go anywhere. Poor Prisoners is never going to go anywhere because I'm not comfortable with the police stuff. The mystery element is not great. I'm not comfortable with the murder of a young woman who is murdered because she reminds somebody who's been reconditioned of, like, an exit interview or something with an older woman.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the reason I initially put it aside was that I was just like, wow, this just seems like it would be something incels would think is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that you can kill women because they remind you of other women. Great. And it's totally not your fault
Yeah.
because of how you've been programmed. And, I was like, I could gender flip it and that would solve that problem, but there's still problems
Yeah.
with it. Because, what I wanted to get into was just that, you can try to override a person, but even if you do, you make new problems because no one really has the right to do that. They had su successfully eliminated a serial killer and created this person who just had this weird beginning mem this weird memory of trauma caused by this
Right.
doctor, this woman. And, that's not a bad point. You could work with that in some way at some point. I'm not the only person who's ever thought of it, I'm sure. So it's not like I'm blowing anything talking about it here.
Yeah.
But, exploring it out in this really not very good mystery that's very badly paced was just not the answer. Although I may loot some of the stuff about the setting and the weather, because I grew up in Grand Forks and I believe that I am pretty accurate in how I
Yeah.
described it.
Yeah, the it like when I was listening to it, I could feel the places where it was written from some place of deep love and deep care, where it's like, oh yeah, I know a lot actually about what winter weather looks like, and the experience of like, I've stepped outside. I've never lived someplace as cold as the Dakotas, but I went to school in the mountains. I know what it's like to step outside and feel it in your teeth.
Right. Have your earring posts hurt? Yeah, and people always think snow is like this beautiful blanket. They don't think about how it gets dirty with exhaust, and they clear it off the roads, and so you end up with these weird chunks
Yeah,
off to the side,
awful
all those
brown gray
mountains.
chunks on the side,
Yep,
and they're
and
just full of soot and diesel smoke and,
in North Dakota, they actually call it snert. They say that some of it is actually the dirt because, it's the Red River Valley of the North. It was carved out. It was Lake Agassiz a long, long time ago. And so it's this, beautiful black glacial soil that's very, very good for growing crops, and is not really pretty mixed with snow. But I can probably just get a lot of that stuff out of my memories, honestly. Looking at this, I just felt a great feeling of chagrin and then some pride at how far I've come.
And like, getting back to that thing from the beginning, like looking at your old work with fondness and compassion.
I tend to think of stories kind of like I think of my hamsters, They may be kind of dumb, but they're cute and I still love them.
That's healthy. That sounds great.
But I don't love this story anymore. There are a few things about it that I like, and but that made me go, I'm giving up on this one. I can actually take this one and read it on Tales from the Trunk because it should never be printed. Isn't that funny that this really is for
It's
things that shouldn't be printed?
yeah.
And you've gotten 6 seasons out of this.
And I've gotten 6 seasons. I keep getting people who want to come on and do this. It's incredible. I love it.
And it amazes me that you actually get people like Marie Brennan. I'm like, she had something that shouldn't be printed, really?
I am constantly shocked and amazed and excited by I said this last episode, it's no longer a spoiler unless you missed last episode, in which case listeners go back, listen to last episode, because Adi Sway is awesome. But like, it's not for a trunk, it's for a book tour, but I'm getting Ursula Vernon on later this year.
Nice.
And like, how cool is that? And like, I got to talk to Martha Wells, I got to talk to keep getting to talk to Sarah Gailey. They will always be on this show. I got to talk to Chuck Tingle. Like, that's crazy bananas.
That's awesome. And we've all got something.
We've all got
those trunk stories. Even though it took me a while to admit it.
But you got there. You found it.
Yep.
And all thanks to a jerk messing with the Hugos.
Yeah, that did get me thinking about it because, you know, complicity is a theme that I find very interesting. And complicity and isolation are two things I find interesting. And I work with those a lot in my stories. And in the novel I'm querying as well.
So, and in Gothics.
Yes, yes. Well, it is a Gothic novel, in fact.
Yep.
So I went back and was like, I wonder if there's anything I can do with that. And I went back and looked at it and, wow, no. Oh, no, there is a thing I can do with it. I can talk to Hillary about it.
Yeah, hell yeah. Possibly the best thing you can do with something out of the trunk.
Oh, absolutely. It's really making lemonade out of lemons.
Yeah. Oh, well, Lara, before we get going, I know we've already talked about Story Hour. Is there anything in the wider media landscape that you've been consuming recently that you would just love for our listeners to know about?
Well, gosh, I told you about The Gin Waits 100 Years. That is a fantastic book. Right now I'm doing a lot of reading for The Stokers.
Oh,
so
nice.
So I can be educated when I vote for those. My front runner right now for, I've been reading the first novels, and I think my favorite is Sam Raveline's Edenville.
Ooh.
Yeah, which is kind of cosmic folk horror, dark academia.
Oh.
But very smart alecky, because that's Sam.
I'm here for that.
Yeah, it is a very enjoyable book. I would have to say that of the non-Stoker stuff I've read, The Gin Waits 100 Years by Shibnam Khan is really something I recommend.
Yeah. And I will say on the Stoker stuff, if you haven't checked out Camp Damascus,
there's a copy in the house.
That book.
There's a copy in the house. And you know, that actually had an interesting case because it was originally on the ballot as a young adult novel.
Oh, yeah.
And it just got moved.
Oh, wild.
Because they said this is not a young adult novel. And so they moved it off and moved up another one. And I think that they moved it over to best novel. I think that they didn't take it off the ballot. I could be misremembering.
Yeah.
But that is another one of the many, many things I'm hoping to read quickly. And, you know, I think
will love Camp Damascus.
I'm excited.
It was one of my top novels of last year. And it made me feel a lot of things. Mm. It made me feel seen in a really amazing way. You know, it's got an autistic main character who the whole book is through her point of view, and like, you know, it, in that way, it is an own voices book. And, like, you can tell the amount of love that Chuck has for his own autism.
Mm. Oh, gosh, that's not something you get to hear about much.
Yeah.
I love my brain. That's a great thing to say.
Gorgeous. It is gorgeous. And it is also deeply creepy and has just such a satisfying, like, the final kill is so satisfying in that book.
Is it really a slasher?
It's not exactly a slasher. It's It's more a monster book
okay,
than
good.
It is a slasher.
I have a little trouble with slashers.
Yeah. But it is very... the ending is very Hellraiser. In a very, very satisfying way. I think I can say that without it being a spoiler, because I'm not saying anything else, but it is, like, you can see, you can go through the book and see, like, oh, this is about this movie, this is about this thing, this is about this thing. Mm-hmm. But it comes together in a way that's really, you know, it's more than just the sum of its parts.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the way horror often is, I think, and a lot of good books in general.
Yeah, and it's extremely satisfying. It's extremely spooky. It's, you know, it's got a couple of gross kills in it, but for the most part, it is much more psychological and much more. The horror of the monsters is secondary to the horror of the people.
Mm, I always loved that.
Yeah.
I remember feeling a great, great swelling of pride when a young member of my family borrowed my Death Note manga and said, Light seems like he's all perfect and Rick is so scary. But Light is the real monster. I'm like, yep.
Yep, yep.
Yep.
Ryuk yep. is fine.
Good Light job, is a, kid.
Light is a creepo.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I watched the Netflix adaptation, and it's not horrible for what it is, but it's not Death Note.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely one of those things. If you want to consume Death Note, either read it or watch the anime.
I've never seen the
anime. I really like the anime. It is also deeply silly in some places, which there are some parts that have been memed to death, either from there's a fan dub a fan sub that is has a couple of good memes that came out of it, and then just one scene. One scene is just deeply, deeply silly with the with the potato chips bag.
Hmm.
He stashes a TV in a bag of potato chips and eats a chip very dramatically. Very funny. But
have you heard the musical?
I have not.
I'm not sure if it's ever been produced, but you can find the music from the musical.
Oh, incredible. I'm going to look that up after this.
Yeah, it's a little simplified from what I would like, but it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, Lara, thank you again so, so much for coming on the show. It's been such a delight having you.
It has been so much fun to come here and chat with you, Hillary. I've had such a great time, and you know, there are not a lot of people I would trust to read that story to, so thank you.
Oh, finally, really finally, before we go, where can our listeners find you elsewhere?
Oh, well, I have a handle on the internet that looks great written out and is terrible to do aloud. It's pronounced Lara, so it's spelled pronounced L-A-H-R-A.
Yep.
And that is my website, pronouncelara.com. I use it on Blue Sky. I use it on Twitter when I'm there, which is less often. I use it on Instagram, where I mostly just post pictures of horrible cereals from the grocery store and stuff like that. And I also use it on Mastodon Wandering Shop instance. What else? Are there any other social media that I'm forgetting? I think those are the main ones for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do keep my website updated, so when I have a new story out, you can always find links there if you're not following me on social media.
I am jealous of your strength and dedication in that regard.
Well, you know, when you publish relatively slowly, it's not that hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Laura, again, thank you so much. Listeners, stick around next month when my guests will be John Wiswell and Ivy Fox. Yeah, I'm talking I'm recording with John this afternoon, actually.
Oh, say hi for me.
I will do that. Tales from the Trunk is mixed and produced in beautiful Oakland, California. Our theme music is Paper Wings by Lillian Boyd. You can support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/trunkcast. All patrons of the show now get a sticker and logo button, along with show outtakes and other content that can't be found anywhere else. You can find the show on Blue Sky at Trunkcast, and I post at HBBisnieks. If you like the show, consider taking a moment to rate and review us on your preferred podcast platform. And remember, don't self-reject.